I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1650, Ask Farnoosh.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi, back with a fresh episode of Ask Farnoosh. Last Friday, we did run a rerun, a replay, an encore, as I like to say, because I was in the ER on Friday and also Tuesday of last week. So twice in the emergency room. I'm okay, but long story short, I got an injury in my spine, lifting weights, and they thought it was a blood clot. So that was mistreated. And then I went back to the ER and then they discovered the pinched nerve and I got on the proper meds and I'm on the mend. This is actually the first day since then that I haven't been on a lot of medication. It's getting better. And I think the next step is physical therapy. Thanks to all the doctors at St. Barnabas and my husband for taking care of me and for you, for your patience. I'm really excited to be back and healthy and talking about what you want to talk about. This show, Friday episodes, are dedicated to your money questions. And we've got some good ones this week, including a question about how to stay competitive in this ultra difficult home buying season. 2024 is shaping to be yet another impossible real estate market for buyers. So how do you stay competitive? Also a question in the audience about making pivots in your career when you're in your mid-40s. Well, how to assess for risk, what's worth it, what's not, should you quit before you find a new job? And then another listener wants to know how to invest in a Roth IRA. She's going to be filing her taxes with her spouse. They're going to have combined income that will exceed the Roth IRA limit. So what should they do? What should she do? Can she still invest in a Roth IRA somehow? The answer is yes, but I will get to that answer shortly. First, I want to talk about some of the episodes this week that you might have missed. On Wednesday, just a couple days ago, we had on Karen Holland, who's the founder of Gifting Sense. It's a company, a nonprofit that's on a mission to help school-aged children think before they buy. We talked about how to instill good spending habits with your kids as young as 8, 9, 10 years old. And then on Monday, kicked off the week with the authors of a new book called Micro Skills, How to Take Small Actions for Big Impact in Your Career, in Your Professional Life. A book written by two emergency room doctors, by the way, no coincidence. For my authors in the audience, or my wannabe authors, if you want to learn how to get a book deal, I'm hosting a free webinar on Tuesday, April 4th, in the afternoon, with my book proposal coach, Rochelle Fredson. We're going to walk you through the elements of getting a really nice book deal. Those of you who want to write a nonfiction service-oriented book. You don't want to miss our live webinar. You can register using the link in the show notes. And if you can't make the webinar live, we are going to record it and send it out to everybody who registers. So just be sure to register. All right, let's pick our reviewer of the week. This person gets a free 15-minute money phone call with me. And this week, we're going to say thank you to EFA Doju, who wrote, "In our house, we love So Money." This review was left on March 15th. And the listener says, "I found So Money a few years ago during a time in my life where I was struggling financially. I had more than enough opportunity to grow wealth, but instead ended up in debt because of poor decisions. I appreciate Farnoosh's approachable and intentional cadence to providing financial education in a way that makes me feel seen. She is an ally to all, but her episodes where she championed Black voices in the finance space resonated really well and were so sincere. In So Money, you're going to learn about the tactical landscape of finance, but also the emotional and psychological considerations that make the journey more meaningful." Oh, thank you so much, EFA Doju. Thank you. Email me, Farnoosh@somoneypodcast.com, or you can follow and then direct message me on Instagram. Following is important because if you DM me without following me, your message gets buried. I probably won't find it. So just follow, then DM, and I'll send you the link to help you pick a time for us to have our free call. I look forward to connecting. Usually on these Friday episodes, before we get to the mailbag, I like to start with a little money musing, like what's on my money mind these days? What have I been writing about? What have I been thinking about? Conversations with friends? Well, I'll tell you what I've been thinking about. I've been thinking a lot about how some days feels like we're going back to the Stone Age when it comes to financial equality and specifically between men and women. Have you heard of TikTok? Yes, that toxic cesspool. You're going to find countless videos these days on TikTok featuring the life of the quote unquote stay-at-home girlfriend, the SAHG. You know, there's the stay-at-home mom, the stay-at-home parent. This is not that. This is basically a woman who is just dating a man who has willingly chosen to make no money of her own, to save no money of her own, and to allow this man to completely take care of her financially. Okay, so I have opinions about this, and you probably know what they are. But what's interesting is that Cosmopolitan wrote a very important piece. It actually went viral recently about how this trend, which again, viral on TikTok, a lot of people love it. Some of these are parody accounts, but some of these are legit. And these women are adamant about this chosen lifestyle that they're like, they wake up and they just like have this relaxing morning. They make their matcha latte. They make their boyfriend a coffee. Then they journal and then they go shopping. And then a cleaning person cleans their apartment. It's like they're living the life. And if you have a boyfriend who's not doing this for you, then he's not worthy. Oh, it's just so toxic. So Cosmopolitan recently wrote about how the stay-at-home girlfriend is in peril, because a number of these stay-at-home girlfriends are now just stay-at-home girls. Their boyfriends have moved on and they've left them in financial ruin. As you might imagine, these women claim they had no voice in the relationship. They were walking on eggshells. One influencer, one stay-at-home girlfriend wrote, "If you give a man the power to feed you, he also has the power to starve you." Whoa. So thank you, Cosmo, for writing about this. And thank you even to the stay-at-home girlfriends who are now coming clean about what happens when you're in this kind of a relationship, how it doesn't usually work out. And then they interviewed me, Cosmo, about my opinions, which I was so honored to include and to be considered in this piece. And I did not hold back. I'll put the link to that article in our show notes so you can read the full piece. Basically, I called being a stay-at-home girlfriend and the illusion of this being an admirable and desirable lifestyle, I called it a financial scam. You know, we've heard of Dogecoin, we've heard of multi-level marketing scams. This is another scam. It's a scam because it's being portrayed falsely online and it's attracting these impressionable young women to this lifestyle and even the men to think that this is something that can be harmonious and ideal. But look, if you believe in feminism, it also means that you have to care about your financial well-being as a woman. Money is power in our world, and money is protection. And we don't have money, then you don't have power or protection. Your boyfriend gets all of it. And so what happens, as I said in the article, what happens when you go from being a stay-at-home girlfriend to just a stay-at-home girl? No bank account, no money of your own. You better hope you've got some family that can open the door and let you in. And on a more serious note, you know, being somebody, whether you're a girlfriend or even a spouse of someone, and you're entirely dependent on this partner for your financial livelihood, like you don't even know passwords to bank accounts, you don't know where the money is, you don't know where the money's going, that can very easily turn into a form of abuse because these partners that control the money can now control you. You become extremely vulnerable in this relationship. If you remember that interview I did with the woman who was a survivor of financial abuse on So Money, she talked about how she couldn't even call herself an Uber to get out of the house because her Uber account was tied to her partner's Uber account and he was trying to control her from leaving the house. And so she literally had to escape to a woman's shelter to get out of his control. And, you know, some might say, well, isn't it a woman's choice to do what she wants to do with her money? Well, yeah, but she doesn't have money in this case. She's choosing to essentially be in servitude of somebody else. And she is relinquishing her financial rights, her financial power to this other person in this relationship. That's not healthy. That is far from feminism. And what I really want to say about all this is that if only these women had more fear, if only they had healthy panic about what could happen. What are the worst case scenarios? Because now we know. Cosmo wrote about it. So I'll put that link to that article in the show notes and would love to hear what you think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. All right, let's hit the mailbag. Who's out there trying to buy a house? Raise your hand. It's the spring home buying season, also known as the Super Bowl of real estate. The question that we have this week about home ownership is how to be a competitive buyer in this nutso market. I actually just did a whole webinar on this for members of the So Money Members Club. If you want to learn more about that, just follow the link in our show notes. But we dedicated our March workshop to how to prepare yourself for the home buying season and some of the ways that I and others have played competitively in the buying market. First things first, find yourself a very experienced agent. As a buyer, navigating a suburb or a city without the help of an agent is practically impossible these days. I mean, they're the ones who are going to get you in. They know the other real estate agents, so they can do a little bit of background research for you. They know the market really well. They know what homes have sold for. And so highly recommend working with an agent. The second thing you want to have already, you don't want to do this after you make a bid, is you want to have a pre-approval letter from a bank and put that with your offer. This is different than a pre-qualification. So we often use these words interchangeably, pre-qualification, pre-approval, but they're different. And in terms of being competitive in a bidding war, a pre-qualification is not going to get you very far. You want a pre-approval, which carries more weight than a pre-qualification letter, where the pre-qualification letter, it's a really simple process. You can usually do it over the phone or online with a lender. They'll roughly estimate how much you can borrow, versus the pre-approval process takes up to 10 business days, and the bank asks for more financial information, and they will give you a more precise borrowing limit and even the interest rate on a letter that you attach to your offer. It is essentially saying to the buyer, I'm good to go. I've got this pre-approval from a bank. If you allow me to buy this house, the closing process should go pretty quickly or should go pretty smoothly. So make sure that if you are looking to buy in the next month or two, that starting soon, you go and conduct this pre-approval. To also be competitive in this market, to get a seller to choose you over somebody else, is not just how much you're offering, but how much you're offering to put down. 15 to 20% minimum. But the more you put down in cash, the more that is favorable to you and also to the seller, because for you, that means you're going to get a great loan. Banks love when you have more skin in the game. It's less risk for them, so they might give you a better interest rate. And for the buyer, it suggests that you're very serious and they don't have to worry about maybe the financing not coming through because you're somebody who's obviously stated that you want to have a lot of skin in the game. I would also suggest playing to the seller's needs. You want to find out what the seller wants, what their timeline is. And there's no easy way to figure this out. But if you do, again, have that experienced agent working with you, they may be able to talk to the seller's agent a little bit and get a little bit more information about, you know, the seller's hopes and dreams. And this comes in handy because if you find out that the seller doesn't want to move out of the house right away, maybe they want to stay until June because they want to wait till the school year to end and have their kids finish the school year and not be kicked out of their house before that, that maybe you can accommodate for that and put that in your offer letter. Maybe you discover that they want to offload their furniture and that they're looking to maybe have an estate sale, but wouldn't it be nice if the buyer just took it all off their hands? I know a lot of people think that being competitive means foregoing an inspection. I would never suggest somebody forego an inspection. Why would you do that? Why would you do that to yourself? You will probably find yourself in a situation very regretful living in this home and realizing, oh my gosh, the plumbing's a mess, or oh my gosh, the roof needs replacement. So getting an inspection, I think, is not something that I would forego. Instead, offer to cover some of the expenses, some of the repairs in the event that an inspection finds that the need for it. So if you do an inspection and they're like, everything's fine, but you know, there's some electrical problems on the third floor or the windows on the second floor aren't great, and maybe it's going to cost you between $5,000 and $10,000 to do that. You know, don't shake down the seller to get all of that fixed before you move in. Offer to pay for up to say $5,000-$6,000 worth of repairs on your own. And that, again, it suggests to the seller that like you're willing to be flexible and that you really want the house. And, you know, real estate transactions are emotional. They're emotional for you as the buyer and for the seller. The seller likes to feel like they're giving their home, especially if they lived in it for a long time, to someone who's going to take care of it and is a nice person. You know, and so to the extent that you can relay this to the seller is not a bad thing. And again, having a good experienced agent who has friends in the real estate market, who's friendly with other agents, can help you communicate this. Okay, next up, Amy wants to know how to invest in a Roth IRA when her household income exceeds the limit. She says, I'm getting married, Farnoosh. I'm getting married this year, and I'm most likely not going to qualify for a Roth IRA. That is, if my fiance and I combine our incomes and file our taxes jointly. Both of our salaries combined are under the maximum income limit for contributing to a Roth IRA, but my fiance gets annual bonuses, which could bring us over the income limit. If we do go over the income limit, what would be the recommended step to avoid getting penalized if I want to contribute to a Roth IRA? Okay, Amy, thanks for your question. You know, we love Roth IRAs. The most significant benefit being that the assets contributed to a Roth IRA, along with all the future growth, will never be taxed again. You pay, you essentially fund a Roth IRA with dollars that have already been taxed. So the benefit is in retirement, you can withdraw tax-free. The caveat being that there are income limitations for who can participate. My advice to you, Amy, is that you might want to wait until the end of the year to see how your combined incomes total and what that bonus will mean for your combined incomes. If it does, in fact, exceed the limit for 2024, then take the time between January of 2025 and April 15th of 2025, because you have until April 15th of 2025 to fund an IRA for the previous year. If your income is too high, consider doing a backdoor Roth IRA during that time frame, where you first open up a traditional IRA, you fully fund it, and then you very quickly convert that traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. Very important, make sure the contribution to the traditional IRA is non-deductible, meaning that you're not going to use it to reduce your taxable income. You're going to have to fill out some forms in that tax return to indicate as much. And you want to work with the financial firm that you're opening up the Roth IRA to facilitate this for you, to help you and make sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. But this is how people who exceed those income limitations for the Roth IRA can still participate in the benefits of a Roth IRA by doing this backdoor Roth option. The other thought I have for you is maybe you just decide to file separately, but that might be more of a disadvantage tax-wise for you. So talk to an accountant about that scenario and play that out and see how things shake out financially. But I think a backdoor Roth IRA is probably your best move. Okay, and last but not least, our friend in the audience, I'm going to keep her anonymous, just call her Kay. She wrote in with a question about what to do with her career. She's in her 40s, she's a single mom, and she's not enjoying her career anymore and wants to pivot, but isn't sure about how to afford the risks. Here's a little bit more about Kay. She's a mid-senior level tech worker, works in a big tech company. She actually has survived multiple layoffs. But as a result of all those layoffs, the culture, she says, has worsened significantly in the past 12 months. The company is rewriting operations. There doesn't seem to be any sort of career pathway in the future for her. She says that generative AI and related automations are hurting these trends and hurting the viability of her career path. And interestingly, she said that the company, the organization, lost 10% of its staff last year. And of that 10%, 70% were middle-aged women who were laid off. Now, Kay is 46. She has 4 teenage children. She doesn't have endless flexibility regarding her career and finances. She has got a lot on her plate at home, health issues, custody challenges. Get this, everybody. Her manager turned to her and said, Kay, you need to overcome the limitations of your family situation and stay competitive at work. Yeah. Kay said that this manager urged her to work around the clock, like many of the junior associates and the childless members of the team. And so now she's thinking like, okay, maybe I got to get out of here. And I think that's the right instinct. I'm going to give Kay some thoughts, but just a little bit more about her background. So she actually pivoted once before. She used to work in fine and performing arts and then pivoted to tech. She says she's about 10 to 15 years, quote unquote, behind most professional women her age. She has picked up a few tech credits and certifications along the way. Her resume feels very mixed. She has capped out in her current profession, but hopes to work for another 20 years. She calls her finances stable, but she recognizes that she may have to save aggressively for retirement. She's considering going back to school for another master's, maybe an MBA or even an engineering degree, but she's stopping herself. She says the trade-off feels really risky at my age. Bottom line, she wants to know which painful path is going to be the healthiest and most productive long term. It's funny that we just assume it has to be hard, that there is no easy solution, that everything's going to hurt. What's my advice? All right. So Kay, I mean, first of all, you do have a lot on your plate, and I'm not trying to belittle or undermine all that you have going on. It's a lot. And I'm right there with you. I mean, being in midlife as a mother with a full-time career, in your case, also in the midst of a custody battle, post-divorce, it's so much. And if you're not regularly working with a therapist, I would say start there. Start talking this through with a therapist, investing in your mental health, because you're not going to be able to make any clear decisions amidst all this chaos and stress, that you want to be able to, you know, get to maybe a quieter place in your mind to be able to think more clearly and creatively about your next steps. You're at the early stages of what is going to be, I predict, a career shift. I mean, you want this, right? And so that's going to be frightening because there's a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of what ifs. And to me, it sounds like you're looking for a role that one, pays well, pays hopefully as much as what you're making currently, if not more. Two, allows you to be present for your family and not have to work around the clock. And P.S., not work for a company that is sexist and ageist. Because I'm sorry, laying off 70% of those who get laid off, having those people be mid-level women, that reeks of discrimination. And I, you know, wonder what HR would feel about that. And finally, I think you're looking for a job where you can feel passionate again about what you're doing, feeling fulfilled, like there is a growth trajectory that you can enjoy. And you deserve all of that. And you should have all that. So my guess is, of course, you're going to have to look outside of tech for this, most likely. I don't think jumping into an MBA program or a costly graduate degree is the solution. You have pivoted once, however, so you're going to pivot again and you're going to do it well. Remember who you are. Mid-40s, there's so much going on, especially for women, but this is where I also see many women taking those big leaps and doing it beautifully. I don't think investing in an MBA is the right move, but I do think that what could help you, if instead of spending six figures potentially on an MBA, maybe take like a small four-figure amount and invest it in a professional business coach or career coach, a lot more affordable and I think a lot more meaningful and impactful for what you're trying to get and figure out. You want help identifying your next move. You don't know yet what you want to do. So jumping into an MBA program, maybe you don't want to work on that track, right? Maybe you do want to work in the arts. Maybe you do want to start a business, but it's not going to be in tech. So working with a professional, paying for professional advice to come up with the new blueprint for you is where I would spend my time and my resources. This person should help you figure out not just what you're passionate about, but what you're really good at doing. Looking at all of your work and all of your experiences, skills, your network, and creating like concentric circles. Like where does your power lie? And what does that mean in the workforce? How does that translate? What are the roles out there that would benefit from all that you have to bring to the table? And it might be something you've never even thought of, but the coach can help you. Now, parallel to getting some therapy, getting a professional coach to help you with your business plans, your career plans, I think parallel to all of that, I would begin saving more, like really looking at your budget and what's coming in and what's going out and being ruthless about how you spend for a little bit. For like the next 6 months or so, to the extent that you can, because let's imagine that in 6 months, you either get laid off or you leave. You want to have financial runway. You want to be able to give yourself, afford yourself time to put a plan in place and then execute on that plan. I think you came to me hoping that I would give you some ideas about what you could do next, like actual jobs or actual pivots. I think before you get there, there's a few steps. And that involves your self-care, your mental health, getting to work with a professional who can take inventory of all of what you've done, all of your experiences, and helping you rewrite and reroute where you're going to go next, identifying what those opportunities could be, saving your money in the meantime. And the last piece of this is, as you're thinking about what to do next, and I know that I assumed you wanted to make as much or more than what you're making now, but what if you were making less? But it would be the kind of career that would give you more time back into your personal life, to spend time with your kids, to rediscover the things that you like to do for you. I guess I'm just saying to try to have an open mind about it, because money is not everything. And I know you feel a little bit behind, but if you find yourself back in a job where the pay is good, but the circumstances around that job are not, you will burn out and you'll be back in this position again. So thinking more long term, and how can I adjust my lifestyle, and how can I adjust the way I'm thinking about applying my skills to find a much more sustainable career path for the next 20 years. Let us know what you think, what you decide to do. I would love to hear from you, and I'd love to follow up with you. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in this Friday. Appreciate you. Happy Easter, everybody who celebrates. I'll see you back here on Monday. Our guest is going to be Wendy Pettis, also known as the Relationships Whisperer. She helps women gain financial empowerment and personal fulfillment and transform their relationship with money. Have a great weekend, everybody. I hope your weekend is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.